Hello and welcome to Jibe Talk and the Volvo Sailing Podcast, and we have another terrific lineup for you for this latest edition. We talk to double Olympic gold medalist Ian Percy after Team Origin's match race victory in the week the team's America's Cup dreams ended.
We are very lucky to have the Olympic program. There's a lot of guys in our team who don't have another project that they felt as passionate about. There are a lot of my now good friends that I've sailed with for 3 years are in a position without their job and their dream.
The Volvo Legends Regatta gathers pace with the announcement that Lady Blake, Pippa Blake, Sir Peter Blake's widow, is to become an ambassador for the event.
Not many times I've been asked to be an ambassador in my life, but no, it was really obviously the long association with the Whitbread race, now the Volvo, you know, setting up the Legends event to take place before the Volvo start next November in Alicante, and it's a great honour.
We look ahead to the Velux Five Oceans with Chris Stanmore Major.
Got back from the Clipper Around the World race on the 21st of July into Gosport, and we got the opportunity and the funding to do this race on the 22nd. So putting together an Open 60 campaign in 8 weeks has been quite a challenge, but we've got there and we're pretty happy with what we've produced.
And we also talk America's Cup and TP52s with Yachting World's technical editor Matt Sheehan. But first, it's our old favourite, the Volvo Sailing Podcast News Headlines. Quantum Racing pit Matador for their second TP52 world title in 3 years in Valencia. Ben Ainslie and Team Origin win the Argo World Cup in Bermuda in Stage 8 of the World Match Racing Tour. Volvo skipper Frank Camas is to sail Groupama 3 solo in the Route de Rome. That's brave. Italian company Persico SPA has been appointed to build the Abu Dhabi Ocean Racing team entry for the next Volvo Ocean Race. And the last-minute preparations are underway for the Velux Five Oceans, previously the Round Alone. OK, first up, Ian Percy, after that World Match Racing Tour victory with Ben Ainslie and Team Origin.
Ian, the thing we really wanted to talk about first was what happened over the weekend at the match racing and your victory in Bermuda.
Yeah, we had a great week and are happy to finish Origin off with that victory in Bermuda. It's a great event, very traditional event out there in a lovely venue. And yeah, it was really nice to cap it off. Obviously, a bit of disappointment in our camp after the announcement of the team that we wouldn't be challenging for the Cup. And so at first there was a few long faces, but we worked hard during the week and enjoyed our sailing and we're really happy to finish on a high.
Given the situation, did it give a little bit of extra incentive perhaps this weekend?
Well, I think we're all pretty competitive and always keen to win. I think if anything, it was actually quite tough at the beginning of the week for us to get up for it again when obviously for a lot of us it's been quite a big change in our plans. And but as the week went by, we got back into the flow of how we normally do things, and so we managed to fire it up towards the end.
Now, of course, this victory's left you with an outside chance of winning the whole title as far as the match racing tour is concerned. Does that lead you to think you might go again?
Well, the final event in Malaysia is you have to count the event, and it's 1.5 points. So even though we've actually only done half the events of the others so far, as you say, we do have an outside chance. It is only an outside chance. I mean, we're quite a few points behind, having not done as many competitions, but we got a chance, and so we'll have a talk about it. I mean, I think we really enjoy sailing together, and so, you know, the prospect of going to do an event is a fun one. We'll have a chat. We'll have a chat with Sir Keith, and we might have one last long song.
Well, I, as British fans, I'm sure we're glad to hear that. But Ian, given what's happened with Team Origin, what's next for you? Where do you go now?
Well, I'm in the Dinghy Park in Weymouth at the moment. I got back off the plane from Bermuda and I've come down here, and Andrew Simpson, my Olympic partner, has got all the boats ready. So it's really exciting that I can throw some energy into that. And I mean, October always was planned for a bit of Olympic sailing, but then after that, one of the only downsides of the Origin project was that once they announced it was a 2013 cut, the Olympic sailing, you know, we were desperately looking at the diary, trying to find days and certainly trying to work out if it was possible to achieve both of our goals. Of course, now with Origin stopping, we can certainly turn our attention to the Olympic program for a while, which will be great fun to do. We've only sailed a couple of weeks this year, which is obviously for, you know, the top end of any sport is you're going to be seriously behind. So we've got a lot of catching up to do. So I'm really looking forward to throwing our energies into that. We'll be launching in about an hour's time and slightly different temperature than Bermuda, but no less enthusiasm.
Yes, 25 knots and quite chilly, I understand. Ian, just a final thought. What have you made of the America's Cup announcement and about the kind of boat and the date, and do you see that you could still play a part in the next one?
Obviously, when the original protocol was being announced, we were watching it very keenly and analysing its implications as part of Team Origin. The 2013 thing had, you know, it caused some personal worries for myself, Andrew, and Ben. For the team as well, I think Keith has a lot of interest in the Olympics here, as everyone knows, and also makes it harder commercially. The boats themselves, on the other hand, were exciting. I think it's an interesting experiment, I have the, you know, the fortune of being able to, like everyone else, apart from the guys who planned it, to reserve judgment. Will it still have close racing, or will being catamarans it turn it into more of a drag race to a corner? You know, I'm not of the school of thought it necessarily will be less interesting. I'm excited about the nature of the boat, and I think the racing might work. But we'll wait and see on that. But the technical side of the boat, the challenge of these new wing-mast cats, was really interesting, and I'm quite excited about that. So I think there's pros and cons of it. I think, you know, there were some governance issues that Keith had some issues with, but I think were actually being addressed a little bit and have been addressed. So, you know, the competition, I think, is slowly getting itself back on track. But the and whether I want to be part of that, I mean, I think there's still hard to say. There are a lot of changes going on. Teams like Origin dropping out, and a few others that have got some implications. I think Oracle have stopped and thought, and I think are genuinely re-looking at the competition, and so there will be some changes to come. And, you know, I would say even things like the date are not necessarily set in stone. So I think leave my options open there. But I'm just really happy to be able to put some time back on the Olympic program, something that we love, and back meeting with, you know, our Olympic guys here is certainly put the smile back on my face after a disappointing announcement a week ago.
Ian, thanks so much. Yeah, the only thing I was going to sort of finally say was it must be, I guess the Olympic campaign has helped ease the frustration perhaps of having finally put the team you wanted together for Team Origin and then finding that the blanket had been pulled away a bit.
Yeah, I genuinely thought we're in an incredibly strong position. Grant Zimmer, who had been with Alinghi for almost 10 years, had come on to run the team and was a revelation and great to work with, and had put together a team on the design side that I felt we were in an incredibly strong position. So it was disappointing. But that said, I think we are, as you allude to, very lucky to have the Olympic program. There's a lot of guys in our team who don't have another project that they felt as passionate about as we have to step into. And I think, you know, we are in a lot of ways the lucky ones, and I'm very aware of that. That a lot of my now good friends that I've sailed with for 3 years are in a position without their job and their dream that they were looking towards for the next 3 years. So it's a real shame to leave all those great people and leave a team that was in such a strong position. I think probably the first time in many, many years that a British team was in such a strong position. But I understand the position. You know, there were some issues there. So, yeah, happy and lucky to be turning to the Olympics.
We're joined for this latest edition of the Volvo Sailing Podcast by Lady Blake, Pippa Blake, the widow of Sir Peter Blake, of course, who has got a new role, the ambassador for the Volvo Legends Regatta ahead of the start of the next Volvo Ocean Race. And, well, Pippa, first of all, welcome. And to how did you become an ambassador?
Well, I know. Not many times I've been asked to be an ambassador in my life, but no, it was really obviously the long association with the Whitbread race, now the Volvo, and I was approached by Howard Gibbon and Lizzie Ward, setting up the Legends event to take place before the Volvo start next November in Alicante, and it's a great honour. And well, obviously Peter, did five Whitbreads, and culminating in the win in 1985-86 with Steinlager. And I mean, to us, it was a very special. Yeah, those times are very special. All the three races that I knew him in, with Ceramica New Zealand, then Lion New Zealand, and then finally with Steinlager, were very special times in our lives. Great fun, hard work, but great friendships that have come out of it. And I can't wait for the reunion to take place next year, and hope that as many people as possible will come along.
Now, Pippa, you alluded to it. It was a big part of your life, the Volvo race. Did you find your life getting into four-year cycles as the next campaign was planned?
Yes, but, I mean, to the extent that we have two children with 4 years between them, but that's one of the aspects. But it was always going to be, the next campaign would take place, and you'd the boats would be built, and the new team would be selected, and it was onwards you'd go towards the next event.
Now, you mentioned the friendships and almost the sense of family you've got from the race. Do you have any particular recollections from your time in the Whitbread, in the Volvo?
All of them, all those three races were very special times for us. Obviously, Ceramco New Zealand with the mast breaking and the jury rig they set up towards Cape Town. I think what's so special is from all these races that those guys and their families have remained really good friends to this day. But I think Lion New Zealand was, just a lot of fun. We didn't win the race. She was a heavy boat, but the sort of escapades and events that came out of that particular time were special. For example, the garden party that took place in Punta del Este was a lot of fun, and it involved everybody, and there's great sort of feeling of camaraderie among all the boats in that particular race.
Now, obviously, the regatta, anybody who's ever raced in the Whitbread or Volvo can turn up. Is there anybody in particular you're looking forward to seeing again, or just the whole event is something that's rather special as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, I think the whole event, I mean, from the time it first began in 1973, and I've met, at the times of those races, we met various people who'd been in the race before. I just think it'd be lovely to see any faces that will come out of the woodwork. I mean, I think it'd be great to see some of the French, quite a lot of the French there, because they were always a lot of fun. But anyone I think who has taken part in the Whitbread or the Volvo, I mean, everyone's got a great story to tell. Their own individual stories and the boat stories. We'd love to see as many people as possible.
Well, Pippa, thank you so much for joining us. A final question. I know this has just been announced, and you've only just agreed to the role, but do you know what your part as an ambassador will involve? Do you have a uniform or anything?
I hope not. Well, actually, no, I don't know yet. I'm just very happy to be invited, and I think it's going to be a very special occasion, and I look forward to hearing what my duties might be.
So do we. Lady Blake, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Well, it's time for our regular update with Matthew Sheehan, the technical editor of Yachting World. And Matthew, interestingly, the last podcast we were talking about the reaction to multi-hulls, and largely it was very positive. But I understand things have changed a tad since that initial rush.
Well, they certainly have, Guy, that's right. I mean, 2 weeks at the moment in America's Cup life is actually a pretty short space, and lots happened. But, yes, as you say, the initial feeling was one of excitement and fascination with these big multi-hulls, 45-footers, and then the 72-footers. And since then, we've actually had a number of teams that have come forward and said, actually, very very sorry, but we're not interested in the Mardi Gras and we don't wish to play. One of the most recent ones was United Internet Team Germany, who were players in the 32nd America's Cup, which was the one in Valencia in 2007. They had been hoping, they say, that the next America's Cup would be run in Monaghan. It's not, and they don't feel that they can play. But of course, the big shock news over the last week was of Team Origin announcing that it too was going to be pulling out from the next cup, and that was probably one of the biggest bits of news in the last couple of weeks.
Matthew, are you expecting more withdrawals, or is this a bit of politicking and getting in the right position, if you like, ahead of everything being finalised?
Well, I think it's a bit of both, Guy. I think we are going to hear of more people saying, sorry, not up for it, I'm afraid. I think that's just the way of the world. At the moment, we're not hearing lots of them because the official challenging period doesn't open until the 1st of November. So there really isn't anything to be gained. If you're still weighing it up, then there's nothing really to be gained from saying, no, I'm not in. So I don't think we'll have lots of them. But there will undoubtedly be other teams that say, sorry, not up for it. Having said that, we also hear that there are a number of teams who are ready to press the button as soon as we get to November the 1st. There's plenty of speculation about who those teams may be, but some of them are pretty big players, it sounds like it. And there's some new teams as well that are being talked about, new consortium of sailors and team members there. So it's such a difficult one, you know. You can I think the bottom line about the America's Cup, and the fascinating thing, certainly for me, about the America's Cup is that it's unlike any other event, and there will be undoubtedly people who say, oh, they've got it all wrong, the multi-hull's the wrong thing, they're going to kill the Cup, it'll kill it, it'll ruin it, the event won't happen. Well, with the America's Cup, that simply can't happen. If you hold the Cup, you only hold it until someone comes along and says, I want to challenge it. You can't ever get rid of it. So there will always be another challenger at some point. It might not be a regular interval. It might not be quite where you expect the challenge to come from. But once someone's challenged, the defender is obliged to race. So it won't ever be killed off. It just might be in a very different form. And at the moment, it's probably anybody's guess whether the new multi-hulls is a rule is really going to fire up people and say, no, we want to have a go at that and this is completely new, or whether people will look at it and say, no, I'm afraid at the moment it's just too much hard work, it's going to cost too much money and we just can't play. At the moment, the jury really is out on which way it's going to swing.
So jury out on teams. How about a race course venue?
Well, that's been another topic of conversation for the last few months, and it boils down to, I mean, in a normal, if there is such a thing, a normal America's Cup cycle, the team that wins the America's Cup wins the event and takes the cup to their home patch and runs the event from there. And one would expect the America's Cup to automatically just be in America next time, but actually it's not as simple as that. Because Oracle are faced with a bit of a dilemma at the moment. Initially, it seemed that when the Cup went back to the States, that there wasn't quite the enthusiasm for getting round it and hosting the new event. It certainly seemed to be a little slow off the mark in that respect. And if you're trying to attract a big European audience and teams and the TV and everything else, the west coast of the States is not necessarily the most convenient place to locate it. And I think there was some concern as to whether, if the Cup was actually over there, whether actually people would say, no, we just can't afford to do it. And, you know, they ruined their chances early on. So that's a very strange thing happened. The negotiations, we are told, or the conversations, let's say, we're told, have been happening. And it looks like there are two other key venues. The first one, or there's three in total. The first one in San Francisco, in the States, of course. And then the other two, one is rumoured to be in Rome, and the other one is Valencia. Now, Rome is, of course, the home of the challenger of record, Mascalzone Latino, Club Nautico. So perhaps it's of no surprise that that area might be one of the areas that they chose to run in the next Cup. And, of course, the big appeal of Valencia is that it's almost the safest bet of the lot, because all the infrastructure is built. There are bases there, the harbour's there, it's been through a couple of cycles already, it's proven itself as a good venue, so it could be there. And right up until a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago maybe, Rome seemed to be the one that most people were talking about, and seemed more likely to go there with Valencia as a backup. Now we hear an awful lot more chatter coming out of San Francisco, and San Francisco has really fired itself up, and now we're hearing all kinds of talk about raising the $280 million that they need to redevelop the port. There are drawings and plans and all kinds of ideas about how they might run the racing out there. So it's sort of hotting up. We're expecting to find out by the end of the year. But again, it's one of those things, you know, a couple of weeks ago we thought we knew where it's going. Now we're sort of stuck in the middle thinking, I really don't know.
Yet another space to watch, as there seem to be so many in the America's Cup at the moment. Now, just turning away from the event itself, of course, the America's Cup being such the huge event it is, has knock-on effects elsewhere. And there was fear that perhaps the TP52 circuit could be hit. What's the latest there, Matthew?
You're absolutely right. There was concern because on the Med Cup tour, there were a number of teams within the group of boats over there. They were all America's Cup teams. There were sort of four or five of them that were hardcore America's Cup teams. And there was a concern that actually once the new rules were announced for the America's Cup, that those teams would up sticks, head off and go and build the America's Cup boats and leave the TP fleet rather depleted. And to a certain extent, that is what has happened, in that the most obvious team to have said straight away, right, thanks very much, but we're off, are the Kiwis and Emirates Team New Zealand, who won the season for the second time around, sold their boat, and now they're focused on their other campaigns. Obviously, their Volvo campaign is one of them, and the America's Cup campaign. But what's been interesting is that suddenly there's been a whole lot of other people who've put up their hands and said, oh, well, actually, I'd quite like to build a boat. And some of those have been existing players. The Quantum, Sail Quantum team are building a new boat. And we hear just recently that Nicholas Zenstrom, the owner of Rahm, he has said that he wants to build a brand new TP52 for next season. And we hear talk of another couple at least. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see three or four, maybe even more than that, new TP52s for next year. And I think the irony of the whole thing is that people thought America's Cup would damage it, would harm the TP52 circuit, but in fact it's enhanced it, because this focus on multi-hulls for the next America's Cup means that the Med Cup series of the TP52s could well be the world-leading Grand Prix monohull event. So it's pretty exciting times for them.
Well, Matthew, thanks as always so much. I'm sure everything will have changed again the next time we talk in a couple of weeks. But for the meantime, thanks very much indeed for joining us. And last but by no means least, Chris Stanmore Major, who by anybody's reckoning has had an interesting build-up to the Velux Five Oceans.
It's been an uphill struggle, actually. The time frame was the hardest thing to deal with. I got back from the Clip Around the World race on the 21st of July into Gosport, and we got the opportunity and the funding to do this race on the 22nd. So putting together an Open 60 campaign in 8 weeks has been quite a challenge, but we've got there and we're pretty happy with what we've produced.
That is an extraordinary turnaround. Who did you have to help you? Did you have a team behind you? How did all this happen?
We're kind of doing it old school fashion. I had a chap called Aston Campion, who's one of the guys that was in the boatyard when I came in there with a boat. We had a chat, sat down, had a coffee. I explained what we needed to do, and it's been him all the way to putting the boat together, painting it, sorting everything out. So I can't underestimate his input to this. But it's been the guys in the boatyard and people coming together and helping out and just making it happen. Yeah,
Chris, you just mentioned you finished the Clipper race. Are you sure you want to go around the planet again in a boat?
I thought it might be the best training for going around alone, might be to just get out there on the ocean and see what it's like. But there's a kind of there is a lead from one to the other. The skills necessary to take the cruise off on the first couple of legs on the Clipper race are quite similar, actually, to sailing solo, because you're completely responsible for anything and everything that's happening on board the boat. The guys at that point were amateurs, very little experience. So they didn't really know what was happening around them. I was able to relax a little bit later on, but that kind of initial section, I guess, was the training and the awareness of everything being down to me. So that's going to be concentrated and focused in this race, but it's going to be a different kind of challenge setting off with nobody on board. If work gets heavy, it's just going to be me and, I guess, moving a little bit slower than I'm used to, but plodding through the jobs as I can.
Will you be going around the planet the other way for this race?
No, the same way, luckily, so I know the route.
excellent. Is there something special about doing this alone as opposed to being part of a team?
I think so. You know, this kind of racing is the ultimate challenge in sailing, whether you stop as you go around or whether you keep going all the way around as the Vendée does. This race has a different kind of character to the Vendée. This is sprints where we can push the boats hard and we know we've got time to fix them in port. But it means from a skipper's point of view as well, you can push yourself a little harder, get a little bit closer to the edge, and know that you've got a couple of weeks to relax when you get into port. But I guess as you move up from dinghies and then keel boats and then off into any kind of setting you enjoy, there's always that thing of when it comes down to just you and the boat and the waves and the wind, and whatever happens then is solely your responsibility. It's absolute self-reliance, and it is the ultimate challenge.
So, Chris, who do you see as your main competitors in the Velux?
It's got to be everyone, actually. To kind of qualify that is that this kind of racing has famously kind of munched really well prepared and really well financed teams. We've seen people get round with minimal budgets before. I think the skills which are going to come to the front with this Eco 60 class, which are a little bit older boats, and they've been around a few times before, is the kind of self-reliance, engineering, and keeping those boats rolling. So whoever's the most successful of that is going to be there at the finish, and they, of course, are the competition. But to look at the boats now, you might pick one from the other, but who's to know what will snap and break as we get out onto the ocean?
Well, Chris, thanks so much for joining us. Very best of luck, and hopefully we might be able to catch up sometime around the racetrack.
Absolutely, that'd be great. Thanks very much.
Okay, that's it from this latest edition of Jibe Talking. Please remember to join us again next time when we'll have all the latest from the world of sailing. And remember to check in at regular intervals to www.volvooceanrace.com.